Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. It's summer. It's time for everybody to travel. It's time for everybody to eat watermelon. Go swimming.
Yes.
It's a wonderful time of year. This is a great time of year for families. Mm. Everybody's out of school. They can take the kids with them. They can take the grandkids. I mean, what a deal.
I know, right? It's like it's the traveling season, and it's hard to believe, but, you know, as we get closer to August, you know, then all of a sudden we get into, like, it's almost back to school time already. And so it seems like the summer just seems to fly by every year. It gets a little bit faster.
It does. And, you know, I took the granddaughter, you know, we took her out to New Mexico. She's out there in the high pines and, you know, sleeping outside, cooking outside.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, everybody said, oh, my gosh, what have you done to this child? I said, it's going to be a fun deal. I got a card from her. She said, Mimi, thank you so much for sending me to camp.
Really?
See there?
Wow.
Yeah. I knew she'd love it. And she likes the horseback riding. You know, it's different than Texas because, you know, you're high in the national forest. You know, you're got tents and you can see the stars outside. And I mean, you know, they don't have mosquitoes and all that up there.
Oh, yeah.
Think about that. Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's exciting. I mean, I suppose this is probably maybe the first time ever that she's actually gone out and connected with, like, actually, like, earth and nature.
With nature, yeah.
Without
first time in her life. And I think every girl or every boy should go to camp. That's, you know, my children went to camp. I went to camp as a child. And, you know, you do things with other kids and you forget about everything. You just have a darn good time.
Yeah.
So I think camp, if you can afford it, you know, you saw I didn't take her to Texas camp. I mean, those $7,000 fees were too much for me.
Wow. $7,000.
$7,000 if you want to go to camp in Texas.
Good.
I guess
Lord.
We should all start a camp and show them it doesn't have to be that expensive, but elsewhere. It is really expensive.
Wow. I'm still shocked because when we went, and I know it's been a while, but when we went to camp, it was like a couple of hundred bucks. And
that's
that
right.
Was it.
When
wow.
My grandchildren went, the first set of grandkids, it was like, or my kids even, it was like $300.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I believe it was $300. It wasn't very much. And now, you know, when I called and found out how much these cost, I lost interest real fast.
Yeah.
I just lost interest. And this Camp Mary White has been in business since 1927.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. That's almost 100 years.
Old camp. And all these girls that went there for years, now they've come back as counselors. They love it that much.
Really? Now, that's cool.
It is cool. And there's not anything swank about it. It's old-fashioned, down to earth. I mean, these girls were, you know, it's not like getting your nails done and all this, you know, going to the mall stuff. This is getting back to nature.
Yeah. Wow. That's
good
cool. And she's I guess, realized that you can get through a day without some kind of electronic device and and all that.
That's right. They don't allow anything like that.
Wow. How cool.
You have to bring your boots, your rain boots also. I mean, because, you know, in the National Forest, it rains every day a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
So, but camping out and eating over the fire, I think that would be a heck of an experience for any kid.
Oh, yeah. Gosh, it would be
and
an experience.
I think there was about 100 girls that showed up for that first 2 weeks.
Really?
There was a lot of girls.
Wow, that's a big crowd.
And, you know, this sits on 200 acres of land.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So, wow.
And I think it's 7,000 feet up in the mountains.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and the drive up there is on this old rickety road, real narrow.
Wow.
So there's not any highways or pavement going up to the camp. You've got to rough it.
Wow.
To get up there.
So when she gets there, or she's already there, or as you're driving up, it's like she's not going to hear traffic for like a couple of weeks and horns.
No traffic, no cars.
Oh, my goodness.
No vehicles.
Wow. That sounds amazing. Do they have such a thing for adults? Because I'd love to go do that for a while.
They need an adult camp, let me tell you.
We really
do. They need to send everybody to an adult camp and let them rough it for a week or 2 weeks. I think it'd change everybody's life if they were without electronics and the office and all this high-class stuff for a week or two would bring you back to reality.
Yeah. Wow, it would help us appreciate nature. I mean, even just, you know, not hearing things like, you know, cars and not smelling exhaust and, you know, just kind of like hearing like crickets and, you know, watching birds and just simple things like that. Wow, that sounds amazing.
And the cool, crisp mornings, you know.
Yeah.
They not only had to take a sleeping bag, but they had a blanket inside the sleeping bag.
Oh, wow. So it's chilly.
And they have to wear warm winter pajamas. So you know it gets cold at night up there.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Which would really be a lot of fun.
Yeah. God, I mean, warm days and then those cool, crisp nights. Golly,
yeah,
that
cool,
sounds...
crisp nights.
Oh.
You can't beat it.
No, you really can't. I wish I was like a kid still going to camp. Wow.
Yeah. Everybody does. It's, you know, it's a fun deal. I think everybody should participate in it and get away from going to the mall and getting your nails done and calling somebody on the phone 24/7.
Yeah.
You know?
No social media for a while.
Can you imagine? No electronics for 2 weeks.
Oh, wouldn't that be amazing? Of course, it takes an adjustment period, I'm sure, because we don't go more than 5 seconds without looking at our phones. But boy, once you break that, golly, I suppose.
Once you break that click there.
Yeah.
And settle down and forget about phones, forget about everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd really be a relaxing, relaxing time.
It really would. Wow.
And the horses, riding the horses every day, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just a fun, fun deal.
Wow. And all of a sudden, I find myself daydreaming about camp. And I hadn't done that.
And another thing, there's no boys there.
Oh, really?
That's another good thing.
Hmm. So she'll be able to just focus on being herself.
Having a good time.
Yes.
And eating good and, you know, doing all the things that girls do.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow. Man, that sounds awesome. And you got a postcard, you said, and she's having a great time.
She's having a great time. And thanked me profusely for sending her to camp. How about that?
Wow.
It wasn't one of those snarling deals like, how dare you send me this place?
Come get me right now.
Yeah, come and get me. Oh, my gosh.
Wow. Well, you may have opened up a whole new world for her that she didn't even know existed then.
I guarantee she didn't. She's never even been on a farm.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
This girl is, unfortunately, the llamas are the closest thing she's ever been, you know, to animals.
Hmm. Boy, when you first, you know, said that you were going to send her, I was like, wow, you know, it could either go really, really well or it could go very, very bad.
I thought about that, but I wasn't going to tell anybody if it went real bad.
No.
I was just going to not say a word. Say, yes, she went to camp. No, yes.
Keep it brief.
Keep it brief and don't tell.
Wow. Boy, I'm glad that, you know, she didn't, you know, suffer from like culture shock and meltdown, that she didn't have a phone and social media and all that. It sounds like she's really embraced it, which is really cool.
And I know she's going to have so much to tell.
Mm.
I know when she comes back, she'll talk for 2 days. I have every expectation of that.
Wow. That's awesome. That is really cool. It makes me want to go
to
camp.
I think it is too. I would have loved to have been up in those mountains for a couple of weeks. I think it would do me a lot of good, I'll tell you.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if there's like, I'm sure there's probably some kind of like resort or something that you can do where, you know, there's no phones or, you know, you just get back to, you know, riding horseback and nature and all that. I wonder if there's like some kind of a thing for like adults. There should be if there isn't. Because boy.
There should be. I don't know if there is.
We'll have to look into that because if there's not, we might have a whole new business idea. A camp, adult camp.
Adult camp.
Make a fortune. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
And speaking of making a fortune, how are we on the bidding process with bidding on policies? How is that this
week?
Well,
we're bidding on a lot of policies this week. We've closed one smaller policy. I think it was $500,000. We're waiting on the $4 million maturity to come. It hadn't got here yet. Somebody asked, well, how long does it take? I said, usually 4 weeks or five, you know, because we have to get that death certificate. We filed the claim, but we don't have the death certificate. As soon as the death certificate gets here, it goes direct to the insurer, and then we usually get paid in about 12 days.
Hmm.
And it's faster now that we've changed that, and we're sending the claim in first as soon as we know about it instead of waiting for the death certificate. We used to wait for the death certificate to file the claim, and it takes longer. So we're doing it this way, and it is a lot faster.
Good. Yeah, there's been a lot of improvements over the last couple of years, and getting paid faster is a big deal.
That's right. So. And North Star that handles all the data for us, gets the death certificates, knows when they die. They know like in 3 days, and used to we waited a long, long time. And they've got a better system, and usually in 2 to 3 days on the $4 million, we knew on the third day he died.
Yeah.
You know, it only took 3 days to find out.
Didn't you even tell a week or two ago about you know, somebody, a policy matured on a Saturday and you knew by Monday morning, first thing?
That's exactly right. It matured on Saturday and Monday we had notification.
Wow. That is
fast.
So
that is fast.
Golly.
And, but we're bidding on a lot of policies right now. We've got a $3 million one that we're bidding hard on because we really want it. And then we've got some smaller ones, you know, like $500,000, $350,000, that we're looking at. And of course we've turned three down this week. Turned one down that was 44 months. We can't
oh my
do that.
God. 44. Why would they even send that? They should know better.
And then we turned one down that was gonna run out in 28. Can you imagine buying a policy? They're saying, oh, well, it's going to expire in 2 years. What if it didn't? The thing runs out in 28.
Well, yeah. Then
now,
you're...
if somebody didn't catch that and they buy that, they're going to be in trouble.
Mm.
That's a big risk.
Yeah.
Because if the policy runs out in 28, they don't have anything except air.
Yeah.
I mean, you're left with nothing.
Like literally nothing.
You know, that's
wow.
right.
I'm surprised.
So, you know, we had to turn that down. As I said, we turned down three or four this week that had problems.
Hmm.
And one said 9 months. And when I read the life expectancy, it said 12 years.
Wow.
So, you know, we're looking for somebody that's 28 to 34 months. I've got several I'm bidding on right now that are 16 months. They're really short.
That is short. Wow.
But we've had two different people that we bid on their policy. They agreed to it. Then they went to the doctor before closing and found out they didn't have near as much time as they thought, so they reneged on the contract.
Really?
They said, we'll just go ahead and give it to our children if we're fixing to die. I mean, you know, that's what they decided.
Wow. I mean, I know that happens, but... gosh, to have them all, you know, pretty much, you know, be there and say, okay, we're going to go forward, and then all of a sudden, they don't. But I mean, you know, even though when you get in those situations, even when you have like those other policies that you were talking about where, you know, it looks like it's going to be, you know, it's either 44 months or, you know, one thing says something else. And then you look on the back and it's a little bit different. You know, it's not a bad thing when you start turning down policies and not even bidding on them. It's what you're doing is protecting investors from bad policies. And that's the whole point. You don't just take any kind of anything that comes over your desk.
No, because we don't want to deal with this. We deal with everything up front.
Yeah.
You know, if it's got problems, we don't want it. If it's good, we do want it. And we're going to bid hard and try to beat the competition and get it. Because there's some really good policies out there. So there's no use to take any risk.
Yeah.
You know, we know how much the premium has to be. We know how many months it's got to be. And then we want to be the right kind of cancer. You know, we don't want a cancer that you can live with. We want one that you cannot live with, that there's no cure for.
Hmm. Yeah, there's I guess the whole point of doing this is not, because you see the commercials on TV where the people are, you know, they're like sitting in the lawn chairs, and then there's some people like underground, and they're saying, hey, you've got, you know, cash in your policy, whatever, and you know they're out traveling and playing golf and sipping tea out in the backyard, and you know, playing baseball with the kids and all this and that. Those are not the kind of policies that you're looking for. You're not looking to buy any old policy that may, you know, expire in 20, 30, 40 years. You're looking for the...
No, we don't want one that they just want to be bought out where they can travel.
Yeah.
We're not interested. We do business only with sick people. We don't want anyone over 74 years of age. We don't want to buy an old person's policy. We've done that, and we know how bad that turns out. So, you know, we want people that have terminal cancer. It has to be stage 4. If it's not stage 4, we're not going to buy it. So if it's stage 4 and it's the right kind of cancer that we know about, and we trust those certain kinds because we know you can't survive them, that's the ones we're looking for and the ones we're going to buy. And other than that, we're going to turn them down if they have other problems.
Yeah, I would imagine you probably get I would guess a lot of junk that people try to slip through, maybe that you do turn down. I'm guessing.
Every once in a while, we'll have one that somebody does try to slip through. And when we get to reading it, we find it. And I guess they think maybe we wouldn't read it. We might not see it and might buy the darn thing. And, you know?
they don't understand that the word on the street is your nickname is Eagle Eye Faye.
So that's right.
Nobody's. And, they're not,
you know, when we're going through that, we look at their age. We look to what type of cancer, what stage it is. Then we look to see if they're obese. We're bidding on one right now that the guy is really obese. And he weighs like 256 pounds. He's lost 40 pounds.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, he weighed 300 pounds. So that tells you his story right there. If a guy's only 5'7" and weighs that much, you know there's a serious problem.
Wow. Interesting.
And the cancer, it's a lot harder to work on cancer when they're obese. I don't know why, but it seems like the medication, the chemo can't get through all those layers of fat.
Hmm.
Yeah. So that's always a problem. And then depending on what kind it is, you know, small cell lung cancer is one of the deadliest that there is. And then, of course, we've done several esophagus in the last 2 years, and every one of those came in early. But stomach cancer is serious, and colon cancer. Those are the ones we're most interested in.
And not only do you look at the types, but you also look at their lifestyle, too. If they're playing golf or...
If they're playing golf, they're not sick. We're doing the ones that have been in the hospital several times. The chemo is as bad as the cancer, really. And then some of them are on radiation. You know, they're trying all kinds of things. And on breast cancer, if they've been to Mexico, we're certainly going to buy it.
Mm.
Because once they've went to Mexico, they've stretched the time thin.
Yeah.
Because they'll come back and it's advanced a lot.
Yeah.
And over the years, we've done an awful lot of breast cancer, and it's usually 2 years on breast cancer.
Wow.
They may say it's a longer, but I guarantee the ones we've done, I don't think we've had anybody go much over 2 years.
That's fast.
It is, because they've had it and think they're over it, and then it comes right back because it's in the lymph nodes and they just don't see it. Mm-hmm. We're bidding on one right now. They checked 13 lymph nodes. The man's got cancer in 10 of them.
Oh, wow.
You're not going to survive if you've got cancer in 10 lymph nodes.
Mm-mm. Wow.
Because, you know, that's a blood lymph node, and that goes all over your body.
Yeah.
It's we like have lymph nodes everywhere.
The super highway.
It is. So, you know, those are the things we're looking for. You know, the different types of cancer, how far along it is, what kind of treatments they've had. And when we're buying a policy, everything counts.
Yeah.
You know, the medical records, what hospital he's been going to, what doctors, you know, if he's on oxycodone, if they're in that much pain, you know, it's a serious deal.
Yeah.
And then if he's on like three cancer medications, it's serious.
Mm. Yeah, this is all, I mean, you have a ton of information that you read when, because you've said before, it's nothing for you to read like 700-800 pages of content when investors get the policy. Say you go ahead and bid on a policy, say you're awarded it. Investors don't have to read 700 or 800 pages. It's all kind of summarized on, it used to be page 14, but it's what, 5 pages from the back?
It's about 5 pages out, but it's condensed down for them.
Yeah.
They can just read that 2-page summary, and they get a good idea of how many times they've been in the hospital, what kind of cancer, what stage it is, and what the prognosis is.
Yeah. So it's all condensed.
You know, we've got it condensed down where it's a lot easier for them.
Yeah.
And then if they have questions, they call me. Say, Faye, tell me about this policy.
Hmm. And people don't have to be medically trained to understand this. It's not like it's, you know, this weird medical speak and strange name. Because I know sometimes medical terminology, especially like medication names and things like that, can be a little bit complicated. But people don't need to be, they don't need to be medically trained to understand what each policy is about and the history of it and all the data in here. It's easily digestible by regular folks, right?
That's right. A regular, ordinary person can understand it. If they can't, you know, all they have to do is call.
Yeah.
Or they can trust us, you know, on what we say it is. And most of them do. People have been with us a long time. They don't usually have a lot of questions. If it's a cancer they don't understand, they may call and say, tell me about this kind of cancer. Because there's a lot of new kinds of cancer that most of us haven't ever heard of that they're discovering. So, you know, even sometimes it's something we have to research. But most of the time it's the tried and true cancers. It's the ones we know, we understand, and we're trying to keep up with how many of each kind that we've had mature.
Hmm.
Where we'll know which ones are maturing the fastest and which ones are going a little bit over. And, you know, that $4 million one was almost on time.
Yeah, like almost exactly on time.
Right. And we called it right. And those other three that we've just paid on, they did real well. Those were all on time.
So really for maybe somebody who's thinking about, you know, getting into something a little bit more conservative, the way that this works is when you get, you know, like a $4 million and a couple other ones that'll come in kind of at the same time. The idea is that once those policies mature and the money is in people's accounts, the idea is to turn around, reinvest it in other policies because you want to be in as many policies as possible. And you want to have a diversified portfolio. That's really the key to success with life settlements, right?
It is. You've got to be diversified. If you come in with just one policy, it's going to take you a long, long time. But if you come in with several and then add to it all the time, you'll have a nice portfolio, a nice spread. And it's like these last four policies, this has added a lot of money. It's going to add about $6 million to people's accounts.
Wow.
Yeah, because we've already had like $2 million that's went into people's accounts, and then we've got this $4 million coming. So you know, people are going to have a lot of money to invest and to roll over into some other policies, and all these people are going to have a lot more than they would want just sitting still. So they're going to want to invest it as quickly as possible. And that's what we're working toward, getting some policies ready right now.
You'd mentioned that people who have been with you for a while kind of know the process. They kind of understand, really, if a policy comes up, they usually just say yes, and they don't really have a lot of questions. Do you find, though, that new investors have a lot of questions up front? Like, well, what does this mean? Or what does, you know, do they
well,
have?
On the first one, they may have questions. But after they get used to it, they don't. They, you know, if they like the length, if they like the type of cancer, they just say yes.
Hmm. All right.
If they have questions, they may say, I need to study this before I give you an answer. And lots of times when we're doing a big policy, people will say, I'll call you back in a couple hours.
Hmm.
And
okay.
They will. They'll read it and then give us an answer.
Wow. All right. You know, because I know that people are looking for... I guess, how do I say this? We live in an easy world, or where people are looking for easy. And so there, I know a lot of people are looking to get into investments that are not only conservative, but don't take a lot of, I guess, interaction or a lot of engagement.
A lot of management.
Yeah.
They're not having to do a lot of management on their accounts.
Yeah. And so I imagine that's probably one of the big draws, especially as people kind of, you know, understand, you know, I would imagine after the first one or two, people kind of really get it. And then at that point, I don't want to say it's on autopilot, but it's pretty low maintenance. It's pretty easy. It's like you'll send out the email and they'll you know, they'll say, here's a policy if you want in, and they'll look at it and they'll say, yeah, sure. Or I would imagine probably you even have some that don't even look at it. If it's there and available, they know it's a good policy, and they'll just, you know, kind of, you know, approve and say yes, I'm in, or something like that. Is that kind of how it
most
goes?
Most people just read it briefly and send it a little email and say yes, put me in.
Yeah, and at that point it's just a matter of, you know, wait, set it and forget it, essentially.
That's right. They don't have to pay attention. All they have to do is when we let them know that it's expired, it's matured, that they've got money coming, and they love that.
Yeah. Yeah, nobody's having to get up at midnight, check their portfolio, see if anything's in there, you know, nothing like that.
See if they've lost any, yeah. it's an amazing thing. There's all the difference in the world in a stock account and an account with us. It's all the difference in the world.
Yeah.
I've been reading about all these accounts lately. That the big boys do, not the small investors. We're talking about large investors. And they said that there's some of these REITs, a lot of people need cash right now. They their real estate deals have gone south, and they're trying to get some money out of the stock market. Well, I read that this guy had $100 million invested. And now, you know, they told him he could have $1 million in cash out.
Really? That's it?
$1 million. And you've got $100 million invested. That wouldn't set too well. That'd be a bad situation.
Wow. What is that?
Some of those real estate deals have went sour, and the people are wanting to get their money out. They need cash.
Mm.
And you cannot get it all out, let me tell you.
Boy.
Couldn't even get 50 cents on the dollar out.
Wow. That sends a big message right there.
It's a scary message.
It is. Golly, are people, and I don't even know if you know what the word on the street is, but are people getting nervous? Election years are always weird to begin with, but do you find that as we get closer to November, people tend to get consumer confidence kind of, you know, gets shaken a little bit? They don't know what's going to happen. You know, do people generally think that maybe the same might happen this year, or are people warning?
I think they should be super cautious right now. I mean, the world is topsy-turvy. Politics is really screwy right now. And people should be very cautious. That's all I would say about it. Is, you know, I would not, for anything in the world, be heavily extended in the stock market right now, between now and the end of the year. you know, Warren Buffett, some of these people think that there's going to be a crash.
Oh, really?
And I don't know if they know what they're talking about or not. But several gurus have said, you know, a person should really be careful right now. And I think between the political scene could cause some bad stuff to happen.
Mm.
I think it's just the uncertainty and the turmoil. You know, the turmoil is terrible, you know, in this country right now. I don't remember ever having this much turmoil, you know, when we're fixing to have an election.
Yeah.
And everything, nothing is settled. There's smoke everywhere you look, you know. So yeah. A person should be cautious. I would advise anybody that's got 100% in the stock market to really think about it.
Yeah. I'm just wondering.
I would not want to be there.
Yeah. It makes me curious if people are, you know, kind of like in the same place. It's like, okay, we're already in the third quarter. And so are people trying to maybe at least think about getting out in front of anything that may or may not happen, just to kind of make sure that they've got some kind of something? Because with a life settlement, no matter what happens, people are still going to get paid. They're still going to get paid the full amount. They're going to get paid when the policy matures. It's not going to be delayed.
And it's not going to go down.
Yeah.
If we have a crisis, so to speak, it's not going down. It's a life insurance. Always think about that. Be proactive right now. You know, everybody that's in life settlement, you know they'll get paid. It's a life insurance company. If you're in the stock market, anything goes wrong, it's going to be whatever it's worth that day.
Yeah.
It goes down real much. It'll take you years to recover. So I'm just saying, be cautious. I wouldn't want to be in that position, frankly. I would not want to own a bunch of stock right now because anything can happen. I mean, you do not control the stock market. You cannot control politics. You can't control what the other fellows are going to do.
Yeah. And all those variables.
You know, we don't know what's going to happen.
Mm-mm. We don't. There's too many uncertainties. And with the life settlement, all those uncontrollable variables are taken out of the equation. And it's just, it's straightforward. They've got the reserves on hand. For those who maybe are not either in a position to do a life settlement or maybe don't want to, there are people that prefer things like annuities. How do you say that it's not there in the stock? They mirror the stock market, right? But they don't go down.
It mirrors the stock market. It's never an annuity. It's never directly in the stock market. You don't have the risk that you have in the stock market, but you have the gains. So if the stock market is going up, you get paid. If the stock market goes down, it just sits still. It does not go down. That's what I love about annuities. It's got a stop gap where it cannot go down. You're not going to lose any of your principal. So safety first. If you're in the stock market and you say, well, you know, I just need to go to a safe place and stay there, an annuity is the place. These companies are worth billions of dollars. Nobody's ever lost anything in a fixed index annuity. The only ones you can ever lose is if it's a variable annuity. And variable annuities are right in the stock market. We're not. This mirrors the stock market, and it stops right there. And there's no probate on this. You've got everything going for you. I can't think of anything bad about an annuity. And there's no probate because you've already got your beneficiaries listed. They're right there. So you know that. And your money is, your interest is locked in once every 12 months. So you don't have anything to worry about. You can take money out every year. At the end of 10 years, you can cash the whole thing if you want to. But most people stay in. I've had people that have been with me since I started in business. Mm. So they've had policies all these years. And when the 10 years is up, they stayed.
Wow.
But a lot of them are getting really elderly now. So, you know, some of them, they've taken money out every year. They had IRAs. But some people had two. They had a regular account with me, and then they had an IRA. The regular account, I've got one lady, and I've talked about her before. She's never even cashed anything out of that.
Oh, wow.
She started with $100,000 in it in 2003.
Oh, wow.
Can you imagine what it's worth today?
Wow. I was over 21 years. I can't even
21
imagine.
21 years of interest.
Wow. That's a lot of interest.
She has one son that will get this. And IRA has supported her all these years.
Wow. That's
cool. Her house was paid for. She worked for a newspaper. And when she retired, she had some bad dealings with stock company. And she came to me and she said, Faye, you know, I've got this problem. I said, are you solving it? She said, yes, I'm fixing to get it solved. And she went to court against them. She won big time. And she took all that money and put with me.
Wow. And done very well ever since.
And she's done well ever since. And, you know, things happen. And they saw this widow, and they took advantage of her.
Oh, gosh.
And when I met her, she was right in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And she went to court, and she got her money back, I'll tell you that.
Wow. Well, that's she got lucky.
She did. She got very lucky. Because, you know, every time you sign up for a stock account, it says you will go to arbitration, you will not sue them. You know that.
Yeah. Mm. Wow.
So it's a tough battle sometimes.
Yeah, it is. Those losses in the stock market, if you get hit, you really have no recourse. It's just, well, that's the game.
That's right.
But
they read the instructions to you where you said they could handle it any way they saw fit and that they did not guarantee your principal or your interest.
Mm. Wow.
It's just a crapshoot, you know?
Boy, you dig into that principal.
If it makes money, you get paid. If it doesn't, you take the loss. They don't take any of the losses.
Yeah, of course not.
I mean, you know, that's not what they're there for.
Wow.
So when you're doing this, you're on your own, and you have to think about it. Can I stand the risk for my family? If you can't stand 100% risk, don't have 100% at risk.
Yeah.
If you want some risk, fine. But don't risk everything you've got.
Yeah.
You know?
Make sure I frame this right there. Correct me if I'm wrong. But just to kind of recap with annuities, if people like the excitement of the stock market, this is a good way to go. But it has the safety net so that if it goes up, great. You make a lot of profit. But if the stock market goes down, the annuity holds. You don't lose the principal. You protect that.
That's right. It holds right there. It has a stopgap. There's no downside to annuity, only the upside. You get the ups, no downs, or it stays the same.
Yeah.
And that protects you 100%. So if I was somebody and I was unsure, I would take that money out and put it in an annuity or do a life settlement.
Yeah.
An annuity is almost like a CD. It's just steady. It's not going to make you rich, but it's going to have good returns. It's averaged about 10% the last 10 years.
Wow, that's pretty
good. I went
good.
Back and looked at a 10-year policy.
Wow. Impressive. Yeah, it's very impressive.
It is impressive. And they've improved annuities again and again. They've done some more improvements right now. They've still got the 13% bonus. Anybody that doesn't take that bonus is crazy.
Yeah. That's just free money on top of
whatever
anything else.
It makes, you're going to get the bonus in addition. And then every time you put money in it the next 3 years, they'll give you that 13% bonus on it every year that you put money in it.
Jeez, I mean, that's – there's.
So what could be wrong with that?
Yeah, I can't find any downside to that at all. I mean, gosh, that's a win-win all the way.
I mean, and people – have come to me that have children they don't trust. I hate to say that. And they'll say, you know, we're going to put this in annuity and keep them from getting all cash. And we don't want them to sue the other members of the family. We just want to get them to the side.
Yeah.
And then I've got people that say, I'm not leaving this child $1. I'm leaving it to the other two. Hmm. Well, if it's in annuities, there's no lawsuits. There's no nothing. They get it. They get it about 5 to 10 days after you're dead. So it's a simple process.
Yeah. It's fast, it's simple, and it's etched in stone and can't be contested in court.
It can't be contested. You know, annuities are set in stone. Here's your beneficiary. Here's your money. Here's where it's going. And it's already done. Somebody asked me about a power of attorney the other day. It ends when you do. A power of attorney is only good as long as you're alive. I've had people come to me, say, well, I've got their power of attorney. I said, it isn't worth a hoot. The will or the trust takes over once you're dead. You know, a power of attorney dies with you.
Yeah. Wow.
So it's either your will or your trust.
So.
And if you've got a lot of money, you probably have a trust or need a trust. If you don't have much money, you don't need a trust. The will will be fine.
Yeah. All right. Well, either way, if people are a little bit concerned about what may or may not be coming over the next couple of months, this is a good time to go ahead and get things set up for either a life settlement or an annuity or both if they're looking for some kind of conservative thing. So that's it's a good thing. It's a good thing, especially in times like this. But it's also great, you know, when things are going well, it just kind of no matter what the situation is. Both ways are conservative ways to go, and people have made a lot of money. And that's what it's all about. It's Your Money with Faye Bagley, and your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
And most Saturdays, except for last week, around this time, we get into trivia. So what is our topic this morning?
You're going to love it. Carlsbad Caverns, you know, been there all these years. But how many people know who discovered Carlsbad Caverns?
Oh, my gosh. I have no idea.
Naturally, it was a Texan.
Of course.
James Larkin White, who was born in 1882. He was a cowboy, a miner, a cave explorer, a park ranger. He was everything. He was born in 1882 on a ranch in Mason County. And he started working in the cattle business at an early age. And he preferred it to school. He didn't want to go to school. And his father forced him to attend. But he preferred busting broncs to books and blackboards. When he was 10 years old, he told his dad, he said, I've had enough of school. I want to be a cowboy. Cool. And now you and I would see a little 10-year-old and we would say, what the heck? You know, we're not letting this little kid go be a cowboy.
Yeah.
But he did. He took him out to New Mexico territory. It wasn't even a state. And left him at the ranch of John and Dan Lucas. It was the Triple X Ranch. And his father bought land at Long Tree 3 years later, which is today Carlsbad.
Wow.
And this little boy was out there, 10 years old, and by this time he was 15, 16, and he was out riding through the Chihuahuan Desert, and they were looking for stray cattle. And they were mending fences, and he saw these bats rising from the hills. And it looked like a whirlwind or a volcano or something like that. And he started working his way through the brush, and he saw a great big opening in the ground. And he said, I found myself gazing to the biggest and blackest hole I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And these bats were just bailing out of there, boiling out of there. Well, a few days later, he returned to the cave. He got him some rope, some fence wire, and a hatchet. and he cut some wood from a nearby shrub, and he made him a makeshift ladder. That's a little boy.
Wow.
Yeah, he lowered the ladder into the opening. He was using a homemade kerosene lantern. He went down 50 feet to the first ledge. Then he went down an additional 20 feet. And using the sickly glow of his lantern, he went into the cave. He said he felt like he was wandering to the core of the Guadalupe Mountains.
Wow.
He reached that first chamber. He saw two tunnels leading off in different directions. One was going down, and one to the right, and one was level. He said, well, he decided to go left first, and he discovered the Bat Cave. Ooh. Then he said he went on down. He said, I found myself in a wilderness of stalagmites. It's the first cave I was ever in, the first stalagmites he'd ever seen. But instinctively, he said, I knew for some reason there was no scene in the world which could be compared to my surroundings.
Wow.
So he reached the first formations. He said he crept cat-like across a dozen dangerous ledges. He saw more stagmites, each seemingly larger, more beautiful formed. He dropped rocks into pits to determine the depth.
Oh, wow.
He rolled one boulder into the pit, and it fell for a couple of seconds. They kept rolling and rolling until it became an echo.
Wow.
That was really deep.
Yeah.
Then the light from his homemade kerosene lantern went out.
Oh.
And this is just a little young boy. The darkness seemed to smother him. He described the incident, saying, "It was though a million tons of black wool descended from me."
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And so then he refilled the lantern. I'd have been too scared to do anything.
Yeah, really.
And so then 5 days after his first trip, he and this little Mexican boy made an exploration, and they were carrying food, water, fuel, and homemade torches, and they went down there for 3 days.
Really? Oh, wow.
3 days. Then they took a ball of string to ensure that they could find their way back. Oh, my gosh. So they discovered, you know, the caverns. He wrote about it. The early record of these events comes from a book from 1932, which is a long time afterwards, and it's Jim White's own story. The book was the little booklet was ghostwritten by Frank Ernest Nicholson in exchange for payment of a boarding bill he owed. Nicholson was a journalist, and he came there in 1929. He was sponsored by the New York Times.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and Jim White had a permit with the National Park Service to sell the little books from the underground lunchroom.
Wow.
And Dennis Chavez, a U.S. senator, helped him obtain a permit by putting pressure on the park. At first, they just gave him an oral agreement, but finally, after he died, it became formal, and the little booklet was in print. But can you imagine? He's 15 years old when he discovered Carlsbad Caverns.
I can't imagine. I'm shocked that a kid who's like 15 would do all this kind of exploring. I mean, you expect this kind of thing from, like, you know, a veteran outdoorsman or something like that, and, you know, just to
a cowboy, yeah, a big cowboy or something.
Yeah, somebody who, like, lives out in the land and, you know, knows the territory and the terrain and experienced with, you know, going into caves and things like that. And, you know, when you're 15, I mean, how much experience can you possibly have? So
none.
Yeah.
And going down there, he could have fallen and been killed. But, you know, this kid just went one way in the cave, went the other. He said it was scary, you know, when he got past the bats. And, you know, I just can't imagine. And then, you know, later after when he died, they wanted to put a monument out there. Oh, no, they couldn't have a monument. They just put a little inscription. And it wasn't until years later that they finally built this beautiful statue of him. And it stands out there today.
Wow.
But it wasn't then. You know, it's amazing to me. And, you know, he was married in 1912, and the girl he married was 18. And, you know, the first house he had, it was a little two-room shack, and it was on top of a small bat cave, and it was a few hundred yards from the main cavern.
Oh, wow. That's cool. So he literally, that's where he made his home.
And he didn't have running water. He would take a burrow and let it loose to find its way home with two cans of water on its back.
Wow.
And then get electricity to 1929 or 30, and they could only use it during the day. Couldn't even use it at night.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, he led a very sparse life.
But boy.
But in 2011, they finally put a bronze statue of him descending on a wire ladder at the cave there in Carlsbad.
Hmm. It's about time. I mean, it shouldn't have took that long, but it did. But it's there, and so that's cool. I can't imagine, you know, somebody, you know, as a little boy, saying, "I don't want to, you know, go to school. I want to be a cowboy." And by golly, he did.
10 years old.
He went through with it. Wow. And did some historical stuff.
Anybody could discover, 15 years old, discover Carlsbad Caverns is an amazing story.
Yeah.
And he told a reporter just before he died, they felt Webb was not ready to ride a horse to California again. And the epitaph on his tombstone reads, "The discoverer of Carlsbad Caverns."
Wow. Wow. All because he saw some bats and was curious and went and started exploring. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, you know, we would, you know, go exploring in the woods or, you know, wherever, but nothing like that. I mean, that's just the level of danger and the steps, I mean, to get down in there to begin with and then kind of like look around and then come back, what, 3 days later with all the supplies.
With a little bit of string and an old oil lantern and another little boy to help him. And they didn't fall in the holes. That's what I don't understand. I mean, these are little kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess a kid that at 10 decides to go and work and ride horses and do roundups could do almost anything,
I suppose. And to have the thought, you know, to hey, let's throw, you know, a rocks or a boulder or something to see how far down it goes. I mean, I don't know if that's instinct. Is that normal for people or is that just
I've never heard of it.
Yeah.
I mean, but he was so curious. He'd go to one ledge, then go to a different ledge. He saw the stagmites, all that. And then when the lantern went out, can you imagine the darkness? And finding his way back out of that place was a miracle.
Yeah. And it's so dangerous, too. You know, it's
my gosh. A parent would see a kid do that, they'd faint dead away.
Yeah. they would still be grounded.
That's right, forever. I would ground a kid forever if he did anything that. You know, nowadays, a kid couldn't do it.
Oh, no.
Kids are not that smart. They're not mature enough, and they're not grown up enough to do something like that.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine a 10-year-old saying, I don't want to go to school. I want to go and be a cowboy. And they let him.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he said, I don't want to go to school.
Wow.
And they just simply took him to the edge of New Mexico and put him on that ranch.
Yeah, here you go.
And the rancher hired him. Now, that's what I don't understand.
Yeah.
10 years old.
I don't know how you. I mean, I suppose law wasn't quite the same as it is now.
It was no law. I mean, anybody could work. Anybody if they agreed to work.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like a whole series of events that had to happen to get to that one discovery. That I don't know if that could happen today.
I don't think nowadays anybody could do it.
No.
I mean, I seldom hear about any miracles about young kids anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
I hear a lot of miracles about dogs.
Yeah.
You know, they save the world every day. I mean, you know, the other day that guy was in Utah or somewhere and, you know, had a wreck and the dog ran all those miles to get help and brought help back.
Really?
I mean, unbelievable. Yes.
Wow.
He ran 4 or 5 miles and got help.
Oh,
and
my
knew
goodness.
What to do.
I didn't
mean,
hear
these
that.
These dogs
one.
Are so smart. It's just, you know, I don't understand it.
Yeah. Wow.
But there's been several cases lately where the dog saved the owner, went and got help.
That's cool. I mean, dogs are so underrated and so underappreciated sometimes. Wow.
They are.
It's great to hear stories like that.
And all these people that give up their animals, they should be put out themselves. Did you know all of our shelters are full right now?
Oh,
so
I know
many
it.
People have given up their animals. It's a horrible deal. What do you think those dogs think? You're suddenly in this cage and you had a big home. You were happy. You had a family. And all of a sudden you find yourself over here.
I don't know. That it has to be like literally culture shock to them, I would think.
Well, no, it is. And you know, they don't know what to think. They don't know what they did wrong.
Yeah.
That the family doesn't love them anymore. It's worrisome.
It is. It's heartbreaking to see that.
It is. It really is.
Golly. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
And then before we wrap up, I know we always go over the risks with a life settlement. There are two. What's the biggest?
The biggest risk is the premium. If it goes over, you do have to pay premium. You need to know how much that premium is. Of course, we tell you that in advance on the contract. Everything, any risk is mentioned in the contract. And the other risk is it's not liquid until you die, until that person dies. Not you, but the person that we have insured. Once they die, you have your money. You can either put it in another policy, roll it over, or whatever you need to do.
Yeah.
But during the time of the policy, of course, it's not liquid because they haven't passed away yet.
Yeah. You do have to be accredited in order to do a life settlement. And so what does that mean?
You must be accredited. I think it's that way in every state. You must make either $200,000 a year or you must be worth $1 million, and that's without your house.
Okay.
So, and the minimum investment is $100,000.
All right. And for an annuity, there's not quite the same type of accreditation involved?
No. Annuities do not require that. Annuities, the accreditation is a lot different. They just won't let you put 100%. Like if a person says, I'm going to give you all my money, you cannot do that. You can give us an IRA. You can give us a trading account. You can give us a savings account. But you cannot put all of it in an annuity. They're going to require that you have money, that you have emergency money, that you have money to live on. And if you can't show that, they're not going to let you do it.
Okay. And then lastly, for a new investor, how long would it take to get accounts set up or to if they come to you on Monday, how long would it be before they're, you know, set up and ready to go?
It's usually a couple of weeks.
Okay. So it's a pretty quick
process. Because if you've got a 401k or an IRA you're rolling over, it takes several days to get that check from the other company.
Gotcha.
If
okay.
you're writing a check, it's almost instantly.
Cool. All right. So no holidays this week. Everybody's at work all day, every day. So.
That's right. Thank goodness everybody's back at work.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people, I know that we said Thursday was the holiday. I think a lot of people left on Wednesday.
Yeah.
I think they left on Wednesday.
Yeah. They milked that one as much as they possibly could. Took full advantage of it.
And then they didn't get back till Sunday night,
I
can tell you that.
Late Sunday night, no doubt.
Late Sunday night. You're right about that.
All right, Faye. So one last time for people to call, make an appointment, get information, get started, whatever they want to do, what is your phone number?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.